All right, good evening. If you did not get one of the sheets that are stapled together in the back, you can raise your hand, somebody will bring it to you, or if you're back in the back, you can just grab one. Everybody got it? All right. If you are younger, like third, fourth grade up, you can probably do a lot of these, and that would be good. Brian read for us in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 4 through 9, a very important admonition for Israel and certainly for us. I love especially verse 9. My father was very good at following that particular text. I want you to teach your children diligently and talk about the Lord up when you lie down, when you sit in your house with your television off, and when you walk by the way as you're driving in your car. So there's little additions there, but that's the way we did it. And anytime we got in the car and we were going to drive more than about 5 or 10 minutes, we knew what was going to happen. And I passed that on to my children, and they are passing it on to their children. And it is, I think, very, very important. So, we talk a lot about teaching our children, and occasionally on Sunday nights, what I have liked to do is spend some time on how would you do some of the things that you would do in teaching your children. And this little drill of just the book of Genesis, I believe, is really very important. If you have thought, and if you think as we're going through this, well, there's just a lot of details here that I don't think is important for me to have to remember, whether you're a parent, a grandparent, or a child, you have to remember that all of the Bible is based out of Genesis. Everything comes out of it, and especially the names of people, even some of the names that are somewhat obscure, because when you get to the prophets, he is not going to necessarily say Esau did such and such, or he's not necessarily going to say Edom did such and such. He's going to use the father's name, the originator, and he's going to expect you to know what nation that is. Malachi chapter 1, Esau have I hated, but Jacob I loved. Well, now, if you read that incorrectly, you'd think God didn't like Esau, or that God only loved Jacob. Well, that's not true, because he's talking about the nations. He's talking about what the nations had done and how he had rejected Esau but had saved Jacob for a purpose. So there's lots of things like that that are important in the book, and be able also just to be able to tell the story of the book and know the story well. So I would start out, and just as my father would start out, we would drive in the car, and he would start asking these questions. All right, so from about Brian back, that's group two. Group one is in front, and you're all a group. So you're a little lighter on this side. We always get outweighed on this side than this side. And I've always been wondering if the Lord will stand in front and say, all ye that are on the right side, come, and all you on the left are the goats. I don't know. But something like, not just kidding. Anyway, so I would like to do that answered in those ways. Three groups here, and if you're not in the group that I'm asking, then you can't answer unless the group that I'm asking fails to answer, in which case they won't get to go to heaven, and then we will go to the next group. Though that's the way that's going to somewhat be, all right? So these are things just getting our story down. And we're going to start here in the first question. What do we learn about God? We'll start with group one over here. What do we learn about God from the phrase? Remember, you're thinking in terms of teaching children, by the way. You're thinking in terms of teaching children things that you want to teach children. Yes. You know, I started drilling my kids on a lot of these things, obviously, fairly early. But by the time they get to third and fourth grade, then you start ramping up. Not everything here would be for the younger children, but you're going to go up from there. So when you're talking to your children, and the scripture says, in the beginning, God, what do we learn about God from that first phrase? Go ahead, Mark.
God
Okay, well, that's true. I wasn't thinking of that, but there's no doubt that's true. The name of God, and we're going to get to a question on that in a second, but the name of God here is Elohim, which is a collective noun and therefore plural, indicating there is more than one person. Exactly. What else could you say just from this phrase about God, second group? In the beginning, God. John. Yeah, that's right. He's eternal. He was there before the beginning. So before there's time, there's God. Of course, when you tell children that, they think about the same thing we think. How can that be? I remember explaining some of that to Brent, and when he asked about it, and I can't remember exact age, but you know, 7, 8, 9 or something of that nature, and he looked at me and went, nobody can think about that. That's a good answer. That's right. Who can think about that? You can't think about that. That's pretty hard. All right. Very good. All right. In the verse in chapter 1 showing that God is more than one person. Group 3. Which verse? Good here. 26. 1 verse 26. And God said, let us make man. So you don't have to know the Hebrew to know that it was a plural. Let us make man after our image in our likeness. John chapter 1 makes reference to Jesus, the Word, as being part of that us. Very good. Back to group 1. Dating the earth by studying geology does not consider that God created everything. Fill in the blank. Yeah, created everything with the appearance of age. You just try to date the earth and all that just by geology and all that. It does not consider that everything started already fully formed. Like I think I've mentioned to you before, when I was in San Diego, the postman would always come by, walk into my office and hand me my mail instead of just dropping it in the mailbox. He's like, chat with me. And we'd always have discussions about eternity in the Bible and all of this. And he came in one day, he says, I've got you. Everything has to be really, really, really old because it takes millions of years for a star to have the light go from there to the earth. He goes, there. And I went, right. Or God made the star and took the light and went zip. And he went, oh, phooey. You know, just like, how old was Adam when he created Adam? Well, he wasn't a baby. And all that. Everything was full grown. Trees were full grown. Imagine Adam cutting down a sequoia tree and going, wow, this has been here 3,000 years. I don't know. God just made it. So everything's been created with the appearance of age. The reason God, group 2, the reason of God rested and blessed the seventh day was to teach all mankind. It's kind of an adult concept a little bit. Ideas? What's he teaching all of us about him resting on the seventh day? Go ahead, John.
He's giving the rest being.
Okay, yeah. Okay, giving just the picture that God has planned a rest for all of us, and an eternal rest, and a rest like the garden pictures that rest in which we're with God and we commune with God and we don't have to labor in such a way by the sweat of our brow and all of this. We have time with God. So there's that picture that you see, and that goes all the way to Hebrews chapter 4. Very good. Group 3, the two trees in the midst of the garden. Got any kids over here? No kids. Okay, how many, what are, two trees in the midst of the garden, what are their names? Tree of knowledge of good and evil and tree of life. Okay, so those two, they're right in the middle of the garden. I always thought it was interesting. God didn't put the tree of knowledge of good and evil way, way back in the back 40 so nobody could find it or see it. It's right in the middle of the garden in order to train and teach Adam and Eve. All right. Satan's primary appeal to Eve was that she could be, group 1, like God. That's right. She could be her own God. She could make her own rules. She could She could do that. So it was a matter of her then being able to have power to do something better than what God had done. Group two, the three lusts that were stirred in Eve were what? The flesh, lust of the eyes, and pride of life. 1 John chapter 2, verse 16, she saw the tree was good for food, it was good to look upon, and it would make one wise. So she had all those three lusts. Those are the only ones there are. Satan doesn't have to keep making up new ones because that keeps working. And so that is his way of getting to us. The first prophecy of the Bible, group number three, first prophecy of the Bible is what? Say, you're right. Wow. Yeah, prophecy of Jesus. What's he going to do? Crush the head of Satan. That's right. So he gives a picture of the woman and the offspring of the woman, and eventually, of course, Christ, who is going to crush the offspring of the serpent and crush the serpent himself and destroy Satan and all that Satan has done. And that is chapter and verse, what? 3:15. Okay, very important passage. I usually begin with that with people that I'm teaching, trying to get them a picture of where we are going with that. All right, group one. The first two children of Adam and Eve were... Very good. Cain and Abel. Cain and Abel. First two children of Adam and Eve are Cain and Abel. And when they got older, Cain killed Abel. But group two, other than Cain, who also committed murder in the murder of Abel, the devil did. That's right. Jesus said that Satan was a murderer from the beginning, John 8 verse 44. So you get that picture of the offspring of the serpent is Cain. And Cain sees his brother Abel, offspring of the woman, and says, I'm going to have to kill him. Battle on. Here we go. All the way through the Bible, you're seeing the battle of the offspring of the woman against the offspring of the serpent. And you still see that battle going on today. We should back up and see that bigger picture. When you see evil in the world and evil people, you have to think in terms of that's the battle. We're wrestling against Satan himself, and he has produced this offspring. It's not that they can't repent. It's not that they can't change. We've all changed to become the offspring of God. But that's not the way we started. All right, very good. Group three, Eve had another child to replace Abel, and his name was? Seth. And the Seth's name means what? Substitute. He is appointed instead of Abel. So God is raising up a new offspring through whom the Savior is going to come, through whom Christ is going to come. So Seth then is raised up and instead of his brother Abel. All right, group one. In the 10 generations of chapter 5, only one person didn't die, and that was who? Enoch. Okay. Anybody know how long he lived? Anybody? 365 days. Yeah, just like an average year. Pardon?
You said
days. I meant years. Excuse me. How many days he lives? You're right. I'll make dumb mistakes like that throughout this, I'm sure. So he lived 365 years. That's pretty young. For those days, seeing that people were living over 900 years. And then God took him. Why, and here's group two, why would God in the midst of, and they died, and they died, and they died, all of a sudden have some person who didn't die when the curse was that everybody had to die because everybody had sinned? Why does he have one person live? Jacob. He confused me. I'm sorry. David Lee. Okay? He looks straight. He's giving us a picture, isn't he? The curse is not final. There is going to be the power of God to be able to reverse that curse. One of the things you see throughout Genesis is God constantly reversing curses. When you see a barren woman, you're seeing the curse. When you see God take care of that barrenness, you're seeing God reverse the curse. So it's always giving us an indication that God has power over the curses that went upon them because of their sin. God is the only one who can relieve those curses. And of course, that's still true for us today. All right, group three. His son, that is the son of Enoch, who is the oldest recorded man, is who? Got an easy one, didn't you? But how old was he when he died? 969 years. So he's the oldest recorded man in the Bible. Obviously, there could have been some who lived longer. I always think about that when I was living back and 21 years old in 1969. I'm thinking, wow, if Methuselah had been born in the year 1000 BC, he would have just died. That's a lot of living. That's a lot of time. You got to be good. That's the way I thought when I was younger. Whew, that's a long time to be good. All right. Group one. Noah's three sons are? Jim, Ham, and Japheth. Exactly. Group two. What's the dimensions of the ark in feet? You can see it given in cubits, but nobody knows what a cubit is, so you got to be able to translate that into feet. Excellent. Royce, she's the only one here she's the first in line in heaven. That's just the way it is. 450 feet long, so if you think in terms of a football field, that would be a football field and a half in length. 75 feet wide is pretty close to the width of a football field. And only 45 feet high, though three stories, makes it a very barge-like ship. So that it's not top-heavy like you see in those pictures with the rounded bottom and all. Can you imagine being in one of those? I've been in little boats that have those rounded bottoms. Talk about getting seasick even on a lake. It's just going everywhere. That would have been awful. But a barge is going to be more steady, and it's not good. In fact, when I was in San Diego, somebody at the Institute for Creation, at the Scripps Institute of Oceanography, they had a wave machine in there, and they built a scale model of the ark as it was, put it in the wave machine, it could tilt to a 90 degree and not capsize. So you can just, and I wouldn't want to have been in it at that, but it could do quite a tilt and still not capsize. So 450 by 75 by 45. How long was Noah and his family in the ark? Where am I? Group three. How long was Noah and his family in the ark? Okay. Year and 10 days is incorrect. It's close. Okay. Can't hear you. No? I told you this earlier, Drew. No? Anybody? How long has Noah and his family in the ark? 204. Okay. Here's the key to this question. Noah went into the ark how long before the flood started? Seven days. Now add that to the year and 10 that the flood was on the earth. A year and 17 days. A little tricky question, I understand. Noah and his family were in the ark a year and 17 days. Exactly. So that's good. By the way, I might just stop here and mention this. If the ark were filled with animals, completely, all three stories, filled with animals being the average size of sheep, which would be about the average size of all the animals on the earth. If you filled the ark with the average size of sheep, how many animals would the ark hold? Only Teresa knows. She's heard me teach this 9,262 times. How many? 125,000 animals, the average size of sheep, would have fit in the ark. How many animals are in the fossil record that would have had to go in the ark? How many animals would have had to go in the ark, counting them up from the fossil record? About 75,000 animals. About 70,000 unclean, another 5,000 for the clean animals. So you'd had about 75,000 animals. The ark would have been filled, would have added the whole top story being empty. They could have had all the animals on the bottom two stories, including food, etc., had plenty of room. Somebody said, "Oh, you could get all the animals in the ark." That's a piece of cake. No problem at all. Yeah, Patrice, go ahead. Yeah, yeah. You don't have to take every. You don't have to take poodles plus golden retrievers or anything like that. You have one dog kind, just like we all came from one person kind, one family kind, and it'll produce. There's enough genetic possibilities for all the different kinds of animals that would come out of that genre. Okay, so Noah's family in the ark here in 10 days. Group one, in the Hebrew, the rainbow is actually referring to a war bow. That's right. It is a war bow. God put the rainbow in the sky. He's talking about his bow. It doesn't say rainbow, as a matter of fact. The Hebrew just says bow. He basically hung his bow up like a gunslinger saying, "I'm done with that tool, that weapon," and he hangs it up in the sky as a promise that he will no longer destroy the earth by flood. And so he hangs up his bow in the sky. All right, group two. The reason evil men built the Tower of Babel was? To make a name for themselves in all the earth so that they were not scattered. And in other words, it was self-exaltation, it was self-honor instead of God-honor, and it is not, as so many times has been said in a Sunday school class, that they were trying to get up to see God in heaven. At all what that is teaching in that text. All right, group three. When the people were scattered from the Tower of Babel situation, Shem's descendants lived in what part of the world? North, central, or south? Group three, north, central, or south? Shem. Central. Is that what you said? Okay. They lived in the central part of the world, and we call it the Middle East, right? Middle East. Japheth's descendants moved and lived in what part of the world? Northern part of the world. That's where most of us came from, European countries, etc. And then Ham's descendants lived in the only one left, the southern part of the world. So you got Japheth in the north, Shem in the middle, and then Ham in the south. So that's the general. You can find good maps, by the way, will indicate that. That comes all out of chapter 10 of Genesis, the Table of Nations, as it's called. And there's some good maps on that. Most of the time it's not in your Bible, but there are good maps in other books that show that. Some of the names that you will read, by the way, in Genesis 10 are still names of cities and countries in the old world today. And if you pay attention to that and know your geography fairly well, you'll see that. It's actually pretty cool. Okay, the two great nations that came out of Shem, group one. Two great nations that came out of Shem. Israel. The Arab nations, that's right. Israel and Arab nations, the two nations that don't generally like each other too much. So those two great nations, still in existence today, came out of Shem, both Israel and the Arab nations. A lot of different nations that are considered Arab nations. Ham's four sons. Oh, group two, you really win the big prize here. Can you name Ham's four sons? The reason this is significant, I know you're thinking, that's dumb, I shouldn't know. No, the reason this is significant is these names are going to be incredibly important in the relationship that the nations that come from them have upon Israel. So start with one of them.
Cush.
Okay, Cush is one of them, and what nation comes out of Cush? The Ethiopians. And you're going to see that the prophets mention Cush many times, rarely Ethiopia. Our modern versions cheat. They go ahead and give you the nation a lot of times. Just drives me crazy. Don't cheat. That's not what it said. It said Cush. Okay? Even in this, all right, in this text in Genesis 10, it's going to make a translation. Group three, you got another name, another son of Ham. Canaan. That's an easy one. That's right. Canaan is the youngest. Canaan is a son, and of course, that's easy. Canaanites came from the youngest son, Canaan. Another son, group one. Put. Okay. Put. And Put, anybody know the nation that came out of Put? Libyans. That's right. They're in northern Africa. The Libyans came out of Put. And the final son, group two, of Ham. You got it? Go ahead. Mizraim. Very good. And I'm so happy that you said Mizraim and not Egypt. So Mizraim, which is the nation Egypt, but the man is Mizraim. And the Egyptians then came from Mizraim. So there you have the four sons of Ham, and they're going to be very, very important as you read the rest of the scriptures. All right, group three. How old was Shem when the flood came? Now this is a good one. How old was Shem when the flood came? Throw it out to everybody, anybody. 98. Good. If you don't, first you don't succeed, open your Bible and read it, huh? That's right. 98 years old, and he had children 2 years later, and so he was 98, and then his age at death was what? Group one, anybody? How old was he when he died? I'll tell you the significance of it once we get the answer. Anybody, how old was he when he died?
500.
No. You're misreading. Read it again.
600.
He was 100 years old when he gave birth to the first child, and then he lived 500 more years. So you add those up. So he's 600 years old. Now, why is that important? Because Noah lives 950 years, and yet here we have the son of Noah only living 600 years, because the flood comes when he's only 100 years old. So my point being, look at what happens, and you see that in the genealogy that you'll see in chapter 11. Look what happens once the flood came, and there's a new world compared to the old pre-diluvian world, and that new world does not offer the longevity that the old world offered. So he gets a little taste of it by living 100 years, but then his children are only living in the 400s, and then their children are only living in the 200s. So it drops. If you drew a graph of it, it would drop very, very rapidly. So that's the reason I think it's interesting to know what some of these ages are at death. All right, very good. I think we're at group three. The father of Abraham is?
Terah.
Right. And where did they live originally? Group one? Couldn't hear you. Ur of the Chaldees. Ur of the Chaldees, exactly. So way, way, way over there. Abraham's two brothers, group two. Abraham's two brothers. Nahor and Haran. And which one of them died young? Haran did. He doesn't get to leave Ur when they travel. He's already dead. Group three, the one who died young had a son named? So Haran had a son named?
Lot.
Okay. A son named Lot, who traveled also, of course, with Abraham. And group one, when God called Abraham, the family went from Ur to? To what?
Haran.
That's right. Or the countryside is called Padan Aram, and you'll see it both ways. Exactly. Group two. After Abraham's father died, which would be Terah, his wife, that is Abraham's wife, who was who? Sarah. And his nephew, Lot, they traveled to Okay, so they basically make a stop in Haran, and they do not leave Haran until Terah dies, and we learn that from Acts chapter 7, that once Terah dies, then Abraham goes ahead and moves, following God's command to Canaan. All right, group one, God's three promises to Abraham. There's more than that, by the way, but they're three main ones. It's actually seven promises, but three main ones, three promises. Give me one, group one.
Seed.
Okay, seed or offspring promise. Through your offspring, all nations be blessed. Group two, another promise. Okay, land promise. Group three, great nation promise. Are we the recipients of all three of those at one time, one day? Yes, all three of those are mentioned in the New Testament. We are all going to be recipients of those in a greater way than what was shown in a shadow way with the land of Israel. Group one, Abraham's wife, Sarah, because she was barren, she gave Abraham her handmaid, and the handmaid was named Hagar. That's right. Hagar, what nationality was Hagar? She's an Egyptian. That's right. An Egyptian. The handmaid had a son, group two, named Ishmael, and the nations who came from Ishmael? Arab nations, exactly. Arab nations came out of Ishmael. All right, back to group one. This nephew, the nephew of Abraham, again, had children by, so Lot had children by who? By his daughters. That's right. By his daughters. And group two, what are the two nations that came out of Lot's daughters? Moabites and Ammonites. That's right. Moab and Ammon. And they end up being cursed by God because of their wickedness as well. All right. So then Abraham, group three, Abraham's wife, Sarah, had a child named Isaac at age what? How old was Sarah? Group one, how old was Sarah? 90. That's right. And how old was Abraham, group two? He was 100. So Sarah's 10 years younger than Abraham, and you can mark things by usually Abraham's age. And so Sarah has that. And the child, group three, Isaac's name means what? Laughter. Everybody laughed. Abraham laughed when God predicted it. Sarah laughed when God predicted it. And they all laughed when Isaac was born for joy. That's right. So his name is Laughter. Who are we the descendants of? We're descendants of laughter. That's right. We're descendants of laughter. Joy and laughter is our description. We should also be that, because in Isaac shall your offspring be named. Everything you see there, you have to think of what God has done for us today. Same thing. Group one, his wife's name, that is Isaac's wife's name, was Rebecca. And Rebecca was, group two, the daughter of, where's the hard one? What'd you say, Al? What'd you say, Olivia? Almost. She is the, there, yeah, doesn't go back to Nahor. You got one in between. Bethuel. And then the Bethuel was the son of Nahor. That's right. So you have Nahor and Abraham are brothers. Nahor has Bethuel. Bethuel has Laban and Rebekah. Got that? Okay. I know it's a little scrambled there, but Rebekah then is sister to Laban, and they are the children of Bethuel, and Bethuel comes from Nahor, and Nahor comes from Terah, just like Abraham does. All right, everybody got that? Picture that in your mind. All right, they had two sons. Isaac and Rebekah had two sons named, group three, Jacob and Esau, and their nations were Israel and Edom. What's the word name Edom mean? Red. That's right. Means red because of the red stew. And Esau means, pardon? No. That's Jacob's name. Pardon? Harry. That's right. Harry. So you got Harry, and then later he's called Eat Red. It came out all hairy, like a hairy garment, etc. He was so hairy that when Jacob wanted to deceive his father Isaac to get the blessing, he put on the skin of a goat. You just imagine how hairy he was. And Isaac touches him and goes, "That's my boy. Smells like a goat and feels like one too." I always think that's funny. At any rate. All right, group one. The younger son bought the older son's, Jacob bought, birthright. And then he stole, group two, his
blessing.
Excellent. Stole his blessing. All right, then group three. To escape his older brother, when Jacob escaped Esau, he fled to Haran again, or Padan Aram, where he worked how many years for the first wife?
7 years.
He worked that long for Rachel, okay? And instead he received Leah, that's right, as wife, and had to work how many more years? Anybody? 7 more years. So now he's worked 14 years. Group three, he then worked how many years for flocks? 6 more, that's right. He worked 6 more years and thus lived in Padan Aram for 20 years total. Okay, so 6 more years for flocks and herds, went away, very rich man, after arriving having absolutely nothing, God blessing him. Group one, Jacob had how many sons? 12 sons. His first 4 sons by his wife, group two, Leah. Who were the first 4 sons, group three? Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. That's right. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. The most important four sons, the most important sons to know of this other than Benjamin and Joseph. Now, Christ came through the first four. Christ came through who? Judah. So Christ came through Judah. Group two, Jacob's loved wife was who? Rachel. He eventually had two sons named, group three, Joseph and Benjamin. Exactly. Jacob also had four sons by his two concubines, two apiece. And what were the concubines' names, group one? Bilhah and Zilpah. Shall I tell you how I remember that? Bilhah is Rachel's handmaid. Rachel was called the pretty one, and Bilhah has a prettier name to me than Zilpah. I don't know about you, but so that's how I remember which is which. But each of them had two, and then Jacob had a daughter, group three, named Dinah. Okay? He had a daughter named Dinah. He probably had other daughters, it mentions in the Shechemite situation, the sons, the daughters of Jacob as well, maybe granddaughters, but at any rate. And Reuben sinned by group one. Got a bad blessing, if you can, that's an oxymoron. Sinned by what? Teresa. Yeah. Yeah, he took his father's concubine. Which concubine? Did it. The pretty one. Bilhah. Okay, he went up to, as Jacob said, you went up to your father's bed. Simeon and Levi sinned by group two. Yeah, murdering all the Shechemite men because one of them had laid with Dinah. So murdered all the Shechemite men. And that was abhorrent to Jacob, one of the abhorrent things. You never read those stories and think that all the sons of Jacob were like, oh, those are the patriarchs and they're good. They're not good, especially the first 10. They are terrible. And they have to be redeemed like anybody else. Group three, Judah's three sons by a Canaanite woman. First son was Ur. Second son, Onan. Third son, the boy named Shelah. Of course, I like to call him Shelah. I mean, I just don't, you know, the poor kid. He like that song, The Boy Named Sue or something, you know, you didn't do that to him. So probably Shelah. So three sons are these three. The oldest married who? Group two. Did marry? What's her name? Tamar. That's right. But he was killed because of his evilness along with his brother because he wouldn't pass on the heritage of his brother. And she eventually then has twins by who, group three? By Judah, by her own father-in-law because he would not give Shelah to her. What were the twins' names? I don't think I put this on here. What are the twins' names? Perez and Zerah, that's right. Zerah, he came out, put his hand out first, and the midwife tied a ribbon around the hand or a cord around the hand or something, and then he pulled it back, and Perez means breach. He breached through to the other side and is able then to be the firstborn, which reminds you of Jacob and Esau, where God now is making his election of who he wants. Perez then is eventually through to Christ. And of course, Tamar is the first Gentile of woman to be listed in Jesus' genealogy. God uses even wickedness to bring about the salvation of the world. All right, group two. Joseph was how old when he was sold by his brothers? What'd you say, John? 17, that's right. And he was sold by his brothers to whom, group three? Midianites or slash, it's called, they're called Midianites and Ishmaelites, probably both of them together. And they in turn sold him to who, group one? Potiphar in the land of Egypt, who was the captain of the guard of Pharaoh. And of course, Joseph then was falsely accused and thrown into prison, where he interpreted the dreams of group two? Butler and baker, that's right. And which of these died? The baker did. The baker was the one who was put to death, and the butler was put back in his position with Pharaoh, and eventually 2 years later tells Pharaoh about Joseph interpreting the dreams, and that's how Joseph gets out of prison. At age what was, how old was Joseph when he was exalted prime minister? Group one. To know this age, and I'll show you in a second. Anybody? 30. He was 30 years old when he becomes prime minister, interprets those dreams, then you have 7 years of plenty, and in the first year of the famine, the boys come down. In the second year of the famine, they come down again, and that's when Joseph reveals himself. So he's about 39 years old. So 22 years has gone by since he was sold or saw it sold by his brothers until he actually reveals himself to his brothers. So he's about 39 years old. So those ages then are helpful with that. Joseph had two sons named group two. Who are the two sons of Joseph? Go.
Manasseh and Ephraim.
Now, for $64,000, what does Manasseh's name mean? Forget. That's right, forgetting. I forget my father's house. That's really key to Joseph becoming prime minister and never bothers to even send a messenger the short 75 miles to go back and see how his father is, because he thinks his father has deserted him as well. He doesn't know what's going on until the boys come back the second time and he's able to figure it out. So the oldest name, Manasseh, means forgetting. Which son of Jacob devised the plan to sell Joseph? Anybody?
Judah
devised the plan. Which son of Jacob offered his life later as a slave to save Benjamin? Judah, same way. Redemption of Judah is a picture and a story of Joseph in the midst of the story of Joseph. Very, very beautiful picture. The whole family came to Egypt and lived in what part of Egypt? Anybody? Land of Goshen. Land of Goshen, child. And so that's where they lived. Joseph's life became a shadow picture of who? So many. I think my son sent me, Scott sent me one time about 100 things that Joseph is like, is foreshadows Jesus, provides bread for the world, etc. Last question, Joseph died at age 110. Very good. Abraham died at age 175. Isaac died at age 180, and Jacob died at age 130 when he came down to Egypt. He died at age 147. Moses ends up 120. Aaron ends up 123. You're seeing these ages keep coming down in that way, but you're seeing how Jacob says he didn't. His life was so hard that he was not going to make it to the age of his father's, and only died at 147. He thought he knew he had been cheated. All right, that gives you a little idea. I remember when Austin one time, I said, what am I going to do with you? And he says, take me to get ice cream. And I said, well, I will if you can tell me the ages of these people. And so we worked on it until he could tell me the ages, and he got ice cream. And he knows the ages, I think, to this day. And hooray. All right, we're going to sing a song. Thank you for enjoying this. I hope you will take this and use it. With your children, with your grandchildren, practice it with yourself so that you know it, obviously, and can pass that on. And at some point when we have another holiday, we'll do Exodus and Leviticus or something, okay? So let's take out our, well, if you need a songbook or whatever, but let's stand and sing our song tonight.